journey are we on, and it's our dream and all of that. But what I wanted to talk to you tonight, this morning about is the return. The return. I'm going to give you three different aspects of the return, what I'm talking about, so you walk out with your heart open, like I said in our opening treatment. The first is the return that each one of us makes after such a wonderful holiday that we've just celebrated. Paul gave a great talk last week talking about the metaphysical interpretation of all the holidays that are we're celebrating. We got a standing ovation for that. We had a miraculous day of Christmas Day where world peace, joy, and love is all espoused. And to return after the miracle of the oil, the lamp that was only to last for one day, yet lasted for 8 days. And after we celebrate such miracles, Hanukkah ending today and Christmas ending less than 72 hours ago, we have to return to our lives. We have to go back. But my challenge to you this morning is to not return the way you came. The three kings that came from the east returned to their country by another way, as it says in Matthew. And I'll share with you a metaphysical interpretation of what that means in a minute. We were asked to lay down all of our cares and duties and run with excited spirits to see this new idea of what's being born in Bethlehem, or to see the oil in Jerusalem still burning, a time to follow the eastern star and take the road not taken, a time to flee for refuge from the troubles of the world into a small stable. That's what we were asked to do last week. That all happens, and then there's a time to return. We have to go back to home, have to go back to our laboratory, to our office, to our cubicles, to our lives, and to begin again where we left off. We go in heart and mind to Bethlehem and into Jerusalem, but then we have to walk away. A promise of a new birth for all of us and the miracle of the oil. We have headed into the holidays with such great expectations, and now we're to return with possibly greater disappointments than expectations going into the holidays. The holiday season seems to promise so much and yet deliver so little. The new idea is born, we experience a miracle, and yet wars persist. There's 200 dead on the Gaza Strip this weekend. Iraq and Afghanistan. There's a buildup between Pakistan and India. The marriages are continuing to decay. Our bodies may not be saying what we want them to say with this promise of the holiday. The job's no better on the 26th of December as it is on the 24th. We are promised so much going into the holiday season. The miracle of light. Joy, cheer, peace, goodwill towards men. These are guarantees going into the season, and when we see they really haven't appeared, things seem worse off than they were before. Is the world any different out there because we employ all the symbols to suggest that it is? And as we approach the new year, just how new is that going to be? Will our circumstances be adapted in a new and happier way, and that with them we too shall be brought along just because the calendar changes from December 31st to January 1st? In the middle of winter, how can there be newness? How can this be? The headlines read the same. The earth is barren. In the ancient Western calendars, before the great reforms adopted the English world, it was just in the 18th century, the new year used to be in March. So that's a better time to see a new year. We start seeing that new growth and everything like that. But then they move it back to January. In March, it makes sense. A new year when we can see all this newness pushing through. The cycles of the earth show a sense of new life that one can see in the fields. We get a feel in the air what's going on. There's a natural harmony with the elements of spring. We can affirm that there's a new thing afoot. There is a new and renewed chance. Things need not necessarily be as they were. And that's a good story to see the newness in Easter and everything, but what about now, in January? Yeah, we're experiencing 60-degree temperatures right now, but you know, the 20s are right behind it. They're going to come right back. It's harder for us to return back to work now and sense a newness about us than, say, in March, with all of that changing going around us, unless we truly sense that we, and not our circumstances, not the world around us, are born anew, or we are that living miracle. No, come January 2nd, the world has not changed, and the duties we've avoided to put off until next year and everything like that, you know what? They await us. They sit there. This magic of the season is too great for all of us just to let it end that way. What is it that we needed to do? What is transformed? What's renewed? What is capable of transformation so that when we leave off on the 31st is not the same place where we begin again on the 1st? Of course, where this transformation occurs is not out there in the world, but within us. That's where the change occurs. For we're coming from the holidays with these encounters that the holidays represent all that is possible right in the midst of what seems impossible. We have learned that the new life is not just out there, but it's something within us. That this miracle of light lasting 8 days is the miracle of a light within us. And through these holidays, we have moved about not knowing that, yes, our faces are shining a little bit brighter, even after Paul opened our minds last week. That we can marvel at the darkest nights of our souls about this remembrance of what the holidays offer. So here we are at the gate of a new year, and we have a choice. Do we return to our old world, out those doors to the place where we left off, or do we return to our country, our lives, by another way, just like the three wise men? I came across a great poem that was written in the 30s by an English woman who she was experiencing war all around her in England in the late 30s, and she wrote this poem. Her name is Minnie Louise Haskins. It's called The Gate of the Year. And I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, "Give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown." And he replied, "Go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way." Stop searching outside of yourself, looking for somebody to give you a way to go or a light that you seem to think you need to carry from someone else. Turn to that with which is in you. That shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way. So here we are at a chance to make an old choice, but also to a new chance for us to know something better. This holiday season was about loving purpose and renewed hopes. Continue on with that, for our teaching tells us that there are new opportunities out there for us all the time. We're the ones that have to go out searching for them. New opportunity to discover who we are and what we can become through this renewing of our minds. But the routine beckons us. The old haunts require our attention and our presence. And before too long, we will forget what the holiday season of hope was all about. We're going to pack up that hope with our menorah. We're going to pack up that hope with our Christmas decorations. And we're going to forget all about it. The world will not change until and unless we change. All we have to do is return from whence we came. But you know what? We don't have to go back the same way. How do we step off into the new year? I'm challenging you to step off in a different way. Don't step off the way we came. Tired, worried about the economy, fearful, spirit lost. How is it that we need to return? With a knowingness, to know something better about life. We can look at the starry sky with new eyes. Every time we see a baby, we think of this new life that's there for each of us. Or if you see an oil lamp, just remember the story of the miracle of lasting for 8 days. Life is working in a different way. We have to understand that it works for us. So I ask you, when you walk out of these doors, how do you return? The second story I want to share with you is the story of the three wise men, and it's appropriate for this. And for those of you that were in my metaphysical interpretation of the Bible class, there's a few of you here. When I talk about the story of the three wise men, am I talking about three wise men? No. I'm going to shake some of you up for those of you that didn't take the class. No, when we talked about Adam and Eve, we weren't talking about Adam and Eve. We were talking about two aspects of ourselves. when we were talking about Jacob and Esau, were we talking about Jacob and Esau and the two brothers that are fighting? No, we're talking about two aspects of ourselves that are struggling within. So if I get to a story about three wise men, am I talking about three wise men? Nope. I'm talking about three different aspects of ourselves. So the visit of the wise men from the east to the newborn child is described in Matthew 2nd chapter. And actually, believe it or not, don't go running for the doors. I've got the Bible up here. I'm going to read it just for us for a little bit, but I just want to share that with you. Now, they come from the east, and I love this story. You go right over here, and they've got the temple over here with the Chinese emperor and everything like that, and they have all of those clay figure soldiers, you know, where they were standing, facing the east. Everything's going from the east. We have three wise men. They come from the east. What does the east metaphysically represent? I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm going to let you think about it and all of that. So these wise men were Zoroastrians. And in my class that we're doing on the basics of the science of mind right now, I'm giving quotes from the religions of the world, and I'm giving some Zoroastrian quotes as well. This is where Ernest Holmes went back and even studied the Zoroastrians. This is what the three wise men were. These men lived in what is now called Iran, and they were called the wisdom carriers. They studied the stars. They studied science. They studied math. And they knew that three planets would be aligning that year, and they took it as a sign that a great being would be born and that they set out on a journey about one month before their arrival. So they set out. Now, I don't know if you remember all in early December, we had an astronomical idea going on. Do you all remember the moon and the two planets so close to the moon, and they were coming so close together and everything like that? Well, the Zoroastrians were studying that as well, and that December that they're talking about way back then, which really wasn't December but more spring, but that's a whole nother talk, coming together. So they had to go through Iraq, Palestine, to get to this Judeo area is what they're doing. I'm going to read a short reading from the Bible. Don't go running. It is Matthew chapter 2, and it says this is about the story about the wise men. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who's been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For so it was been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people of Israel.' Then Herod secretly called the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.' When they had heard the king, they set out. And there, ahead of them, went the star that had been seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw that the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure gifts, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road." Metaphysically, what does all that mean? Metaphysically, Barbara King will teach you, this incident symbolizes the coming forth in the conscious mind of a rich soul, very rich, that had been dormant in the soul for a long time. This rich soul brings blessing and powers and abilities to our awakened spiritual awakening. So here we have the spiritual awakening happening. And I'll talk about the three different things. What gold represents is the richness of spirit. What frankincense represents is the beauty of spirit. And what myrrh represents is the eternality of spirit. King Herod represents the selfish egotism, the self-ego. Now, each one of us have a King Herod aspect of each one of us. Each one of us has an ego. And if you've been in this teaching long enough, you hear that ego stands for edging God out. So King Herod comes along and wants to edge God out, because King Herod hears there's a new king. And if you're already king, do you want to hear about another king being born within your jurisdiction? You don't want to hear about that. That aspect of mind that is all ego says there's no room for another king. The conflict is set up in mind between the king of ourselves that protects our ego and all of our material things and all that we think is right to happen. And then we have this king of our spiritual self that says there's a law out there, a spiritual greatness, a richness of spirit that has beauty in it and has this eternality in it. Why don't you have that? This is the riches within us. So the king of the ego says, go and kill the king of that saying. You don't want to hear that there's a greater life out there for you. There's nothing greater than me being King Herod and your life living underneath the king. But you know what? That contention is still going on today in our very own minds. Our ego is edging God out. So the wise men return to their own country by a different road. Once you have the spiritual awakening and of everything like that, you can't go back the same way that you came. Something has to change. So don't take this literally. The story's trying to tell us that these incredible wise beings saw that the time in the world was such that greatness was being born, and they knew to look for it. And they found it, because whenever we look for greatness, it is there. We have to look for it. So the incredible wisdom, the incredible illumined source of God is there when we look for it. But if we look for it through the eyes of King Herod, all of our material world and everything, when we feel threatened by it, or when we think it's another person out there, or somebody's going to give me that light finally, then destruction starts happening. There's that conflict between the two aspects of mind that we have. Because the light of the world, the presence of God, is not out in the world. It's everywhere. It's within us right now. And the three wise men return to their country by a different route, for they have been changed. And so do Mary and Joseph. They return by a different route by way of Egypt. For the ego mind will not allow anything spiritual. So Herod says, kill any child in Bethlehem, two or younger. I am not going to have this child king come about, so kill all the child, two and younger. And they call this the slaughter of the innocents. And Joseph had a dream about this and had already left for Egypt. So he went back a different route as well, changing his route. He went by way of Egypt and then went back to the land of Israel after he heard that King Herod had died. So they returned in a different manner. My third story on return is your story of return. How are you to return home today, out those doors, once you have this knowledge of this illumined self within you, the gift that wasn't just delivered 2,000 years ago, but the gift that each one of us have right now? We have the return of January 1st at our doorstep. And I don't want to think of it as a return like you started January 1st and you go around the whole year and you come back to January 1st. I'd rather think of it as a spiral. I'd rather think that we hit January 1st, 2008 here, and we've traversed, and we've gone on a journey, and we've come back around, but the spiral ends back up here. So the distance between this January 1st and this January 1st are very different. This January 1st, 2008, was a wonderful day for me. One of my best friends in the whole world passed away on January 1st, 2008. Fred's right here, married to Chris Daly. And I've traversed a year since then. And I come back to January 1st. I have a return to January 1st. But you know what? It's at a higher level. A lot of experiences have been lived. And I've grown even more so in that friendship with Chris. And so I return to January 1st. But do I return the same way, or do I return changed? I return changed. I've spiraled around, and my growth has gained. Chris doesn't want the same old David. I don't want the same old David. How does that change occur? It's really funny as people that we say, oh, we want change, but I don't want to change. I want all of that to change. The change has to occur here, and we're changed. And that spiral of a year that returns upon itself, yes, my life has changed, and I have changed. All of us here this morning are on this journey, just like the wise men journeyed, knowing to look for the good. And we come to a place that teaches us to look for the good and know something better about ourselves. And it's not so much what Paul says up here from the podium or what I say or whoever's speaking. It's your own longing that brings your insight. It's not my words. It's your own longing that brings you insight. To awaken yourself to this deep, true spiritual identity that you are. And wise beings visit us all the time, and they pay homage to that part of our nature. They see it more clearly in us than we can see it ourselves sometimes. A friend will show up, a therapist, a practitioner, or a minister. But that doesn't mean when we have and understand this richness inside that we don't have hard times on our journey. I love Matt's song. He spoke about the journey. He spoke about letting go of the fear. He spoke about going back to your dreams. We will have hard times on our journeys, but the deeply spiritual heroes and heroines throughout the ages have all done the same thing. They've had trouble on their journeys and everything, but what do? They always go to that deeper part of themselves and ask. There's something greater to know here. There's something better to know here. And sometimes what comes through doesn't make sense at all. But there's a faith that comes in. That's where trust comes in. That's where Ernest Holmes comes in and says to have a new approach to an old truth, a new way to look at this situation by way of the old truth of just who you really are. When we sense this within, our heart's longing is satisfied, and our deepest connection to spirit is made manifest when we trust that higher intelligence is within us. We are the same as these heroes and heroines. We are called often into danger while we're on our journey. We're often in difficult times while we're on our paths. There are places on our journeys where all of our skills that we've learned up to now and all of our awarenesses that we've learned up to now, they just don't seem to get us very far. You read about the economy today where all of our skills and finances and all the people over all the years and all their awarenesses, they just can't make sense out of where we are with this. But something within us greater knows. It's at that time that we're to go to that which was born within us, that greater intelligence that within me knows the answer. We had Tom Costa here just 2 years ago, and he always says, when you don't know what it is, sit there and say, won't it be interesting to see how mind works this out? Won't it be interesting to see how mind works this out? This part of the journey that we each are on is to rely on the gifts that we have. The three wise men delivered to us, not just 2,000 years ago. The richness of spirit, the beauty of things spiritual, the eternality of spirit. Or do you go back to King Herod? Or do you rely on your heart and soul of this infinite indwelling spirit of God? Which path do you take? Which road do you go? So what happens after that? We have this awareness. We have the December 25th, January 6th epiphany where the wise king supposedly had visited. What happens after that? What happens when, okay, we have this teaching and I ask you to rely on that greater wisdom within yourself? Some people don't sense that they have that within them. Some people have studied for years and years that they don't have that wisdom within them. I've got two different stories from people, and I want you to sense how that awareness came about on two different people. But first, I got ahead of myself. Let me go to a poem. There was a great poem written by Rainier Marie Wilke, and it says, "The Dove. Dove that ventured outside, flying far from the dovecot, housed and protected again, one with the day, the night, knows what serenity is. For she has felt her wings pass through all distance and fear. In the course of her long wanderings, the doves that remain at home, never exposed to loss, innocent and secure, cannot know tenderness only the one back heart can ever be satisfied, free, through all it has given up to rejoice in its mastery. Being arches itself over the vast abyss. Ah, the ball that we hurled into the infinite space, doesn't it fill our hands differently with its return, heavy by the weight of where it's been? Same with us. The difference between that return of the January 1st, it's a beautiful poem. In essence, it says, as we go on this journey, we each are on, we are deeply and profound changed by the journey. And when we return, when we come back, when we come home, we have come back changed. We have experienced ourselves in a totally different way, a wholly new light. We're transformed and different on our return. So when you leave here and see family and friends and workmates and set out into 2009, look at them differently, for they have changed. Don't look at them with your King Herod eyes. Look at them differently. And as you go on your journey spiritually, there are many temptations out there, just like what Math was singing out here. So I've got two examples of those different things that come up and challenges, but I want you to recognize at the end, we need to recognize what's here all the time. Two examples are a Christian story and a Buddhist story. I'm going to start with the Buddhist meditation master that says, here I am, a teacher for hundreds and hundreds of students, some who have experienced powerful meditative openings, but that has not been my way. For a long time, this was a hard thing for me to accept that nothing happened. I am not a person of big, dramatic experiences. For 30 years now, it has simply been a practice of being a person not simply caught by my own ideas of discouragement or success. I would go for months of intensive training, and no spectacular experience would happen. This was especially hard for the first 10 years, but at least I never got trapped into believing I was a special spiritual person. But somehow, something did change. What most transformed me was the endless hours of mindfulness, giving a caring attention to what I was doing. I learned that the inner dropping of burdens was not going to happen all in one piece. But again and again, I simply dropped the burden of my judgments, my fear, of distrust with myself, of tightness of body and mind. At some point, I recognized when tightness and grasping would come, and with that realization, I started letting go, opening to an appreciation of life, finding an ease. They say there's been a big change in me, but it was not produced by any big event. I guess it's just the fruit of being present over and over. I guess it's that simple. And the Christian said, I've always been moved by the longing of the mystics like St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross. When I spent a year at a convent for a year after a failed relationship and family troubles, I read their words over and over. I had the romantic idea that I was going through the dark night of the soul. But for me, it never ended. There was no big experience, no mystical illumination at the end. When I left the convent and continued with my social work, I kept up my prayer work and my contemplative practices, but it remained ordinary and dark for years. Now I realize that I was somewhat depressed and lonely, nothing very mystical about that. And then 10 years ago, I was on a retreat with Father Betty Griffiths, a radiant old Catholic monk with an ashram in India. He had orange yogi-covered robes and white hair, and a deep joy beamed out of his soul like daffodils after a long winter. We talked, and he told me how I had made up this whole story about how this spiritual story should unfold. And then he held my face in his hands and said, "Why not be your own unique self? That's all God wants for you." And I wept, and I danced, and laughed at all that I was trying to be. And now for years, my prayer and practice has continued in its own ordinary way, but I am not depressed, and I have come to love my life. No great experience has ever happened, but through loving myself, everything changed. This part of this journey is very important to us. Each one of us on this journey must return to our homes, to our families, our jobs, to ourselves, and changed along the way, it will not be the same. But here we are, we're Americans, We love Hollywood. We love the Hollywood productions of everything that's going on. We want this huge illumination that's going to hit us like a bolt of lightning, this beam of radiant light. We want to see the burning bush. That's what we want all the time. You fill in the blank. How do you think your spiritual illumination is supposed to happen to you? And for many of us, it's not like that. But you can trust yourself and you can trust the journey you're on. And part of the return is finding that trust. Finding the trust in the Spirit and the infinite mind that's at your disposal and the trust to listen to it. And following it no matter what. You know what? 2009 lies at our feet. Let happen what you want to happen. Let happen what is at the deepest part of your desires. Stop taking seriously all that you think needs to happen. I heard a great poem about 5 months ago by Mark Strand on the radio, and I couldn't remember the poem or anything like that, but one of the lines just sitting there on the radio said, "Go to the graveyard and ask around." And mainly what I got from that whole poem was, what's really important? If you sit there and say, oh, I'm fearful of the economy, why don't you go to the graveyard and ask around, is that something truly to be fearful of? Go to the graveyard and ask around if that's fearful to open up my heart just a little bit more. I've got somebody calling me, but yet we're so fearful to open up our hearts. Well, you know what? Go to the graveyard and ask around. What is it that you need to do? So as you set up your 2009, come to your heart level. Really ask. Go to the graveyard and ask around if something that's really important. But figure out what's important to you. Know the gifts have already been delivered right now. We have that richness of spirit within us. We have that beauty of spirit within us. We have that eternality of spirit within each one of us. Go into 2009 with that awareness because it's wonderful, and so are you, and so it is. Let's take what we've heard here, inspired just a little bit more than when we walked in here, and continue on our journey. The return of where it is that we need to go. And it's not just to lunch or back to our home. It's actually to our entire life. And we do go back changed. Our return is a different route than which we came. We came fearful, unknowing, and afraid to know what's going ahead. But by listening to these words, we understand that a light already within us will lead our way. The journey. It's not necessarily that it's easy and just floating on cloud tops the rest of our lives. It's a knowingness that no matter what, there's that within us that knows the next step, and all we need to do. We let go of the King Herod of ourselves, this ego mind that says it knows what it needs to do. For yes, they too are hand in hand, and we do have our personal selves, and we are an individual expression of this infinite mind. But also, too, we need to put more trust into the gifts that have been delivered to each one of us. The richness, the beauty, the eternality that's within each of us. Recognize that as well. Go looking for the beauty, the newness in every situation, for it's there. Let go of race consciousness of everybody saying something's different, because it's not. The truth of us is the power that's already within us, the truth that we already have. And it's not necessarily that something that comes in a lightning bolt. It's just an unfoldment of something we already have. And we allow that richness to unfold right now. We step out into 2009 with this great awareness, this richness that we are right here and right now. We give great thanks for this awareness, and we release this word to law, knowing it is so, and so it is.